Today is Monday, March 25th, 2019, and this is an interview with Ashley Davies in the Lowry Student Center on the CSU campus. My name is Brooke Shelton, and I'll be the interviewer. I was once Ashley's student when we went on a study abroad trip to Livingstone, Zambia as a part of an African Impact Project. The main questions I have lined up will ask her about her life experiences and what she has learned. Okay, so can you tell me a little bit about your childhood and what you were like as a child?
When I think back to my childhood, I was the youngest of five kids, and there's 4 years between me and my closest siblings. So I grew up fast because I wanted to be like them, but also because they were older, I ended up spending a lot of time alone. So I was very much the quiet kid who had a big imagination and spent a lot of time like just sitting and thinking. And I don't know, what else do you want to know about that?
I don't know. I mean, I guess that's answers the question. So tell me about a teacher or other adult that had like a big impact on your life, like while you were growing up.
Right, that comes to mind. I had several great elementary school teachers who were all women and were supportive of me, and I fancied myself a writer back then. When you're 6 and 7 and 8 and you think you're a writer, you're not a great writer. But it was fun, and they all encouraged me to try and move forward. And I actually wrote this really silly story about a bed that ate your socks, because I was always losing socks as a kid. And so I wrote a whole storybook about it, and my third grade teacher, the fourth grade teacher, she kept it, and I can't remember her name. But I remember her believing in me and liking it enough to keep it. Felt really good, and I felt like, oh, like maybe I'm actually good at school and can do this. And that stuck with me, and I kept writing from there, which I can see, like, it's part of the reason why I majored in English and then now teach it as well.
Do you think that you like draw like inspiration from them, like back whenever, like looking back at them as teachers?
I draw more inspiration because I teach college students, that my senior year English teacher for AP English, she was older, also a woman, but she was so involved in her books that she was teaching us, and she saw each one of them as having a big impact on who we were as people. And seeing that correlation between the book being the book, but also influencing you and having importance to draw from the books and the literature and the history of times. And she would defend her choices and novels that she would teach. Grew up in Utah, and it was a very conservative place. So when we got to Camus, The Stranger, there's a scene in it where a man fondles women's breasts, and she felt the need to defend why she was teaching that, and told us, you know, you're seniors in high school, you're adults, you should be able to read this even if you don't agree with how he's treating this woman. You need to understand that it's part of the world. And she kind of sparked that sense of needing to know about the world and wanting to be a part of all these different stories and being able to draw influence from all these places, which I value in my teaching now.
I actually draw a lot of inspiration from The Stranger too. I love that. When you were growing up, what role did religion and spirituality play in your life?
It was huge in my life. I grew up Mormon, and so my parents weren't really religious when they got married. I have 6 generations of Latter-day Saints on both sides of my family. So I have pioneers who moved to Utah to follow the LDS Church. And my parents weren't involved with it when they were in their early 20s. But once I grew up and remember, I would go to church every Sunday, and we'd have church activities 2 or 3 times a week. So I was in church all the time. And where I lived, all of my friends were Mormon growing up, and so it was kind of my whole world at the time. And I was a good kid. I really wanted to understand what things were about and understand how the world worked the way it did, because so much of it didn't make sense to me. And so I think religion was that early way of like accessing all of that.
Yeah.
But it also taught me how to read because we'd read the scriptures and spend time in Sunday school and in church talking about the language being used and parsing the text for like, why this particular word and what meaning does that have and what impact does it have on the rest of this? Which also directly translates to me as an English major and as a scholar of looking at things very closely. So even though it's not a part of my life anymore, it still had a huge influence on me.
Yeah. Can you tell me about one or two people who have been the biggest influences in your life? Like, I know I already said, like, with, like, the teachers and stuff like that, but, like, outside of, like, teachers, do you know of any?
Outside of teachers is hard. I've made my place in the academy.
It's okay if you don't know any.
Yeah, I'm gonna talk about another teacher. I can't help it.
That's totally okay.
Karen Anderson was my first English teacher in college, and she taught me in that English class. We studied like theories of knowing and looked into how do we really know something is true. And she shared some of her writing about going through a divorce and trying to decide which last name she was going to have after her divorce. And I was really surprised to have a teacher be that so open about her personal life in college. And I had been warned going to college that, especially not going to BYU, that my teachers were going to make me lose my religion and be a horrible influence, and that many of the teachers at my college were apostates and lesbians, and she was those things, but she wasn't scary.
Yeah.
She was vulnerable and kind. We read a bunch of stuff, and she was encouraging me of my writing and always told me, because I was quiet in class, that she was surprised by what I was writing, because I was writing this very feminist stuff about eating disorders and World War II propaganda, and she just didn't expect that from me because I was this quiet little Mormon girl in class, but on paper I was loud and had super strong opinions. So she encouraged me, but then I didn't take any other classes with her, but caught up with her again my senior year when I went to a conference that she was a chaperone for, and she was surprised by how much I had grown and like developed as a scholar, and was very supportive of me then. And I had been married in college, and it was falling apart right at that end there, and she didn't say anything about it. I wasn't really sharing it with my teachers, but I remember thinking about her in that last year of the marriage, and thinking about her experiences in her abusive relationship, and that I didn't want to be 15 years into this relationship and still having things get worse and worse. And so I credit her for helping me see that it was good to leave that bad relationship, and that life would move on and things would get better. And she really did have that influence. And then I emailed her after we broke up and asked her for the essay that I read in that first class of hers, because I had changed my name, which I didn't want to do. And we talked about that. And so she's been a big influence as a mentor and a role model, really, of what you could do when you live in a system that you feel repressed under, and are kind of a second-class citizen as a woman, and retake your life and reclaim your space.
Yeah.
And so she's been probably one of the biggest influences, even though I've been more influenced by her writing than her as a person.
Yeah.
We haven't had that much contact, really.
So you haven't had that much contact since then?
We met once a few years ago. She came out here for a poetry writerly thing on campus. And we got breakfast together and had a really wonderful conversation. And I was able to thank her for being that role model and being able to give me the courage to be who I am today. And she, of course, demurs and thinks that she didn't do all that, but she's open about the things that she struggles with, and I think that's a really big motivation to be more like that and not just be a rock.
Yeah. She sounds awesome, though.
She was.
Yeah. Are there any positive moments or memories from your life that you think shaped who you are today? And same goes for negative events or memories. If you want to start with the positive, if that's easier.
Sorry. Actually, sadly, it's the negative ones that I think are really much easier to talk about because I've spent a lot of time thinking about them. I have some trauma in my childhood. I actually was sexually abused by a family member when I was very young and wasn't given support for it at that time. It got rectified, like it stopped happening, and my parents believed the person that told them it happened, but they thought I was so young that I wouldn't remember. And so I spent years of my life trying to like figure out what the word was for what happened to me, because it didn't have a name. And like I knew it was having an impact on me because my mom would reference it here and there and ask me if I needed to go to therapy when I was five. And that's weird because you don't ask a five-year-old if they need to go to therapy. They have no idea. So it had a really big influence because that's part of that motivation of trying to figure out how the world works and trying to find a word to make sense of what happened.
Yeah.
And influencing the fact that words were so crucial to the way I made sense of everything. And that trauma kind of got repressed at certain points and then would crop up again. It came up in that senior year English class because we read Tess of the D'Urbervilles and had a little bit of a post-traumatic stress reaction to that anxiety. And I didn't realize that anxiety was such a big part of my life until I was in my late 20s, that was what was making me socially isolated and have a difficult time. And so there's the way of looking at it as the mental impacts of it, that I have some PTSD. I don't have the disorder, I have just the stress and the flashbacks and all of that. But I also have anxiety and depression that are directly linked to it. But on the other hand, what I did with that is I empowered myself and I found books useful and I found school useful and I decided I could be smart and I couldn't change what happened to me and I didn't have a choice in that, but I had a choice to be smart and pursue an education that I ended up in grad school. I studied representations of rape. Which,
oh, I didn't know that.
I don't know, was the smartest thing wasn't the smartest way to deal with trauma, especially because I hadn't sought professional help. I was just seeking academic help. But I learned so much about what happened and what could have happened had I not empowered myself to seek out school, that I could have had other more painful ways of coping with it, and that the ways of coping with that experience are me. That it's not the experience that influences who I am, it's how I chose to deal with it.
Yeah.
But I could have turned to drugs, and I could have turned to sex, and I could have turned to self-harm, but I turned to school, and that is a big difference. And I also feel very privileged that that was an opportunity, that I lived in a place that I had a good education system that would foster me, that had things been slightly different, had I been from a poorer family, I wouldn't have had those opportunities to get the help I needed. And I'm now in therapy. I'm a lover of therapy, 100%. Think everybody should do it.
It's okay, I feel the same way.
Yes, it's been a great impact.
Yeah.
So it is very much that, like, as somebody who studies rape, I don't like it when the rape is the character-defining element. And so I push back against it being this defining moment of my life. But between that and what my religion told me about the abuse and how I should view myself because I wasn't technically a virgin, and growing up in a place that valued virtue related to virginity, the society I grew up in made it that turning point in my life. And so I have to live with both of those things of, like, it doesn't define me, but it also kind of does. Mm-hmm. But now I get to choose to focus on things that I had control over.
Yeah. I'm going to move to the next question. Yeah. Unless you have, like, do you want to add anything more to, like...
No, not time.
Oh, yeah, okay. there we go. Can you tell me about one of the most difficult moments in your life? Which...
Yeah, I feel like we covered that.
Yeah. How has your life been different than how you imagined it would be when you were young?
So different. I mean, I thought I would get married when I was like 21 and have babies, and I got married when I was 20, but then got divorced and moved to Colorado for grad school, and I had always planned on I was going to finish school before I had children. And with that relationship being very sour and ugly in many ways, we were not good for each other. I couldn't make him happy, he couldn't make me happy. I had a plan and I was en route to that plan, but grad school kind of, it's hard to figure out how to say it right.
Yeah.
That in undergrad, when I had professors who encouraged me and told me that grad school was a possibility and that I'd be good there, mm-hmm. that I could thrive there, I never thought that was something you do mm-hmm. when you come from my background, because mm-hmm. besides the abuse, my parents didn't go to college. My mom didn't graduate from high school.
Mm-hmm.
So being first generation in school, I thought, like, well, you go to school, but then you're done.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you don't just get to live at a university and make your life there. And so when I found out that that was an option and I got accepted to grad school and came out here, I realized that this is what I wanted. And I loved working with students and I loved encouraging them because of the way I'd been encouraged, and that I didn't really want to have kids anymore because I feel like I fulfill some of that nurturing role in my job, that I don't need to have kids to do that. I get to participate in this other way.
Yeah.
And leaving the church was a tough thing for me and not what I had imagined when I was young. I was very religious when I was young. Mm. And so to lose your faith is like losing a family member. And it's an abusive family member, which is why I left it. But there's still that gap there. So that's a surprise to all of my family that I ended up what I am today.
Mm-hmm.
But I know I'm happier on the other end, and I don't have to try so hard to be happy.
Yeah.
I just get to be. So I'm so much different than I expected, but I'm so much happier than I thought was possible.
Yeah. Which is awesome.
That light note after the really horrible story.
No, I think, like you always find the best moments in life out of, like, negative times.
And you kind of have to.
Yeah.
It's a way of lifting yourself up.
Because, I mean, you never recognize that you're in a good time if you haven't had, like,
yeah.
bad times. Yeah. So, what advice would you give to your teenage self? I'm going to actually, alter that.
Choose
a younger version of yourself.
Oh, yeah. I would even go teenage for sure, because I was really struggling with my mental health at that time, but I knew I was depressed, but I didn't know how to talk about it. And my friends were also all depressed.
Yeah.
And so I realized that we were just circling with each other and that we were all making it worse by sitting around and talking about it all the time. So I ended up withdrawing from that group quite a bit and spending more time alone. And my sister, by the time I was in high school, she was off in college. So I was an only child for the first time, and my parents worked all the time. So I just didn't have many friends at that time, but I was struggling and I knew that this group wasn't good for me, but I didn't really enjoy this other group. And so I think I would tell myself then that I was making the right choices and that looking for those supportive friends who would take me as I am and help me find my better self was what I needed to do. And it ended up being people outside of the church that were those people. which is not what I expected. Mm-hmm. But looking for and holding out for the best people in life and not settling for friendships just because they were there, I can say, like, all of that hard work in teenage years and college years paid off, because I now have this wonderful group of friends that are my family, really, and I have Thanksgiving with them every year, and I know I can reach out to them in a moment's notice when I'm having a bad anxiety today and say, you know, I can't get out of bed right now and I don't know what to do, and they'll help me take the steps I need to take that are good, and they're never dismissive or cruel. And I think when you're a teenager, you don't know if you're making the right choices. And so to say, you know, it's okay, trust yourself, you're gonna figure it out, would be wonderful to hear.
Yeah. Sorry, I never know how to transition to the next question. So.
That's okay.
So can you tell me about some of the most important lessons you've learned in life? Which I feel like you've kind of already described a lot of them.
Yeah, but I was thinking about that this weekend. We went to Costa Rica. And so one of the big things I've learned is how important travel is.
Yeah.
To get back to the Zambia stuff. And so I found a partner who we both value travel and learning from all of these different places you go. But we went on a night hike on the beach to try and see turtles come up on the beach to lay their eggs.
Oh, cute.
And I'm not a great night person. I'm tired and I want to go to bed at 9 or 10. But we were walking along the beach and it was hot because it's Costa Rica. And we'd been walking for 2 hours and seen nothing. And I was feeling frustrated. And I thought to myself, as I often do as a storyteller and story reader, what story would I tell about this day if we don't see any turtles? Because I was getting that feeling that we weren't going to see any turtles. Mm-hmm. And we saw a couple fireflies, which I'd never seen before. And it was totally different than I had imagined it. And we ended up walking for another hour and getting caught in a huge rainstorm and soaked to the bone all the way across, and tired from walking in sand after that amount of time. And thinking about the fact that, you know, not just humans, but all wildlife everywhere, we do these insane things for potential payoff that we never really sure of. And thinking about the connection between us going out there and walking for 3 hours and spending money and time and energy on this for just the chance of seeing this creature is like the sea turtles that come up on shore and lay these eggs, and they don't know if they're gonna hatch. They don't know if their babies are going to make it to the ocean at the end of it, because a lot of them get picked off by other lizards and crabs, and all of these things eat the turtles before they even get back to the ocean. So they lay hundreds of eggs for just the chance that some of them might survive. And to me, that feels very much kind of how you should live your life, is you do wild things for the chance of a payoff. And there might not be one. Or there might be this like tiny little payoff of seeing this tiny bug that lights itself up. But even that is amazing. And just to have passion for life and to continue to be surprised by things and find ways of finding joy, I think is a big lesson.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm just like in awe.
No. So,
what are you proudest of, like personally or professionally in your life?
I am proud of the academic and scholarly work I do. And I find that in times when I look at the world and I'm unhappy with the way people are being treated and the hatred going on worldwide right now, and that kind of
turning inwards that all of these countries are doing. It's not just ours. We talked in Zambia mm-hmm. with the local Zambians about how their country's doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. I feel like being able to recognize that as a teacher, I have the opportunity to increase people's understanding of the world and increase their empathy, and to say, like, your experience is not everyone's experience, and think about this other way of looking at the situation and challenging people to think more critically. I care less about who they vote for at the end of that, because I have confidence that even if they vote for someone different than me, that I don't think they're going to vote for someone who is mean and cruel, and that they're less likely to be racist and bigoted, and that they're going to move the needle slightly. That being able to have that scope of influence where I can teach students to be curious and to consider other people's perspectives is a powerful thing. And I take that job seriously and feel like it is a life's work. Personally, I have great relationships. I have really good friendships, and I'm proud of fostering those and encouraging those in my life. I've also, it feels really weird to say this to me because I'm not used to it, to be able to say that I'm really proud of where I've come to in my mental health and the fact that I've prioritized that over the last 6 or so years to spend the time and money, again, because being a teacher, you have to think about the money, to really work on myself there and to keep pushing myself to find better coping mechanisms, find better ways of connecting people, and to not let the depression and the anxiety rule my world, just knowing it's part of it. Proud of that, but I haven't done it alone by any means.
Do you feel misunderstood by people who have different beliefs than you? And how so? I misordered that a little bit.
No.
I think I meant for that to be closer to the beginning.
I feel like a lot of these questions are really big questions, which is part of the fun of them, is you can interpret them anyway. But I have a really hard time with my family. They all still are very religious. And I live with my boyfriend, and I identify as queer, but I'm in the closet. They don't know that about me, and they probably won't, unless my current relationship with a man breaks up. Doesn't look like it, but for now, I feel safer that way. And I mean, the crazy hair and the, I have pink hair, recording can't see that. And I haven't had naturally colored hair for a couple of years now. Between that and teaching at a college, teaching in the humanities, they know that I don't go to church anymore. They know little bits about me, but I don't let them in very close because I know they won't approve of who I am. And they don't see that you can be queer and be a loving, good person at the same time. They believe foundationally that that is sinful. And even the fact that I am not married and live with my boyfriend, they're loving and accepting to him. But I also know what they foundationally believe is that I should be married and that I should be having babies and I should be going to church. And that I don't know if they think that I'm evil, but I know that their religion, that's so much a part of their life, villainizes me and what I do for a living. And like I said, people in the church told me that education makes you lose your religion. And weirdly, they are right for me in my case, but it wasn't a requirement. I never felt pushed or motivated to. I was never told that I couldn't be religious and be here. It's that for me, being educated means that you're less likely to stand for oppression. And that's what I was experiencing in that church. So they see it as selfish at the very least, what the life I'm leading, and I don't see it that way at all.
Yeah. Okay, I have one more question.
Okay.
Do you have any regrets?
Of course. Of course I have regrets. I relate everything to TV shows because I study pop culture. I've talked a lot about books, but I love TV. Mm-hmm. And there's this Canadian TV show about a woman who her therapy is to go and talk to her therapist about her regrets, and then she goes back in time and relives those regrets to get new experience and perspective on them. Really weird show, but it was good. And I think about my regrets in many of those ways of like, I don't regret them in that I would go back and change them, but that I don't love that I had to go through that. And I see that there could have been other ways. There were other opportunities. Mm-hmm. So probably the biggest one would have been my marriage. I actually wrote in my journal, and I wrote some really terrible poetry. As everybody has. Everybody has terrible poetry. They're lying to you if they say no, don't. I wrote at the time, like before we got married, about how much I knew it was a mistake. Mm-hmm. I knew it was a mistake to be with him, but it was a mistake I needed to make. Mm-hmm. And I still don't understand that part of myself, that in many ways that got me to grad school, because mm-hmm. I wasn't single, I wasn't alone, and he was actually supportive of moving out of state mm-hmm. until right before he didn't. So he was supportive of my education. He was supportive of leaving the state. It gave me a nice, like, way to break away from Utah and my past. But it was also an abusive relationship. He was very controlling. Mm. Told me, I mean, I was also rebellious. And he told me I wasn't allowed to disagree with him in public in front of other people. And that I couldn't talk to anybody about the problems we were having in our marriage. He was also cheating on me and lying about it and gaslighting me and telling me I was crazy and he was gonna have to leave me if I was continuing to be so paranoid. So I see that as a mistake. I see mistakes I've made in my past. It's just hard to, because regret has all of these connotations to it, that if you regret something, you would change it. And I also look at it and go, well, by marrying someone who was such a bad person for me, I didn't marry that perfect Mormon boy who I would have had no reason to leave and move on from. So maybe it's that I knew I needed a way out, and I just didn't know how to get there on my own. So I picked a person that I saw as, like, all these red flags about his lying and his anger issues, and thought, maybe I'll have some leverage here, which sounds really manipulative. But I think it was an awful time, and it took me a long time to get over that. But I see how it shaped me, and I see where I am now and how those choices impacted me. But I can't say it wasn't a mistake, because I can't. I put myself in the way of harm, and I'm not okay with that. I don't know if you have any other follow-up questions or...
No, that's it. Let me say... So this is the end of the March 25th, 2019 interview with Ashley Davies. The interviewer was Brooke Shelton. Thank you.